Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a young card counter called Yossi. He was on our show in October of last year, at which time he had spent about a year moving his bankroll from $3,000 to $300,000. So a lot has happened in the past year, and so we thought we'd have him back on again and see how things are going. So Yossi, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Hey guys, great to be back. Thanks for having me. Really excited to be on the show again.
All right, so we're going to start with the mundane things about money. A year ago, you were up to $300,000 when you talked to us on the air. How is that part of it going?
I mean, I thought that was amazing then for, I mean, I started in July 2016, so it had been 14 months or so, and that was better than I ever expected, and somehow it not only continued but got even better, but got a lot better actually, but that's also attributed to increased betting size and traveling more than I did, because back then I had really only played in the Midwest, and as of now I really played everywhere in the country.
And when you say increased betting size, and what about the number of hours? Like that first year, how many hours did you play? And now this second year, how many hours did you play?
My career is roughly 2,500 hours. And when I came on the show, I was, I think, over 1,000, maybe 1,300-ish. So I've pretty much done the exact same number of hours since then, doubled the hours, but quadrupled the earnings. And I think that's, I've definitely been betting a lot more the early part of this year and late last year. So that was definitely a factor for that.
So how much are you betting now, and how much were you betting then?
I don't think I ever went over two hands of 1,000 then. And I had this unreal month in December at two hands of 1,000, and it grew my bankroll so much that I could fade the risk of 2 by 2,000, and I gave that a shot. Definitely could have gone really bad, and there's not that many places out there that'll even take that action. So looking back, I could have just run horribly and then had to make all that money back at lower stakes, because I could have gotten backed off the places that I lost money at 2 by 2,000. But I did well, and that's definitely a blessing. I don't plan to ever bet that big again, because I realize that there just aren't that many places out there that'll take that, and the fact that I did well at those stakes, I think it's good to just leave that as a thing of the past. And even if there's a couple more stores left where I could do that, it's just too risky to run bad at those, lose a couple hundred thousand, and have to make that back at lower stakes. So I took a shot with it, and it worked, and I'm super fortunate about that.
Now, I remember last year we sort of considered you the luckiest blackjack player ever, because you really had not had any kind of extended losing streak. So now, have you had a losing streak that lasted more than 100 hours?
I had 100-hour break-even stretches where I just grinded and played 100 hours just to get back to my all-time high, but I never lost that much, and I never had to resize my bets. That's the biggest thing. I know a lot of players go through losing streaks that just take them down to a point where they have to resize, and then they're playing the hours, but they're not getting the EV that they could be having if they didn't have to resize. So that's definitely fortunate. I had a $60,000 losing day, like a 24-hour period, And I thought that would be maybe the beginning of my first losing streak, like big losing streak. That was this February. And somehow, and I was thinking, oh, it's going to take me months to get back to this all-time high, 60,000. And I got backed off the places that I lost that 60,000 at. And somehow, within 2 days, I was back to all-time high. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So when you were on the show last year, you were pretty happy and optimistic about being a AP indefinitely. Do you still feel the same way about being an AP?
No. So I'm actually finished playing, and that's part of the reason why I'm on the show, at least for now. And I know it's a classic AP thing to retire and then come out of retirement. It's I don't think retirement should ever be taken too seriously, but with my current mindset, I feel done with it and ready to move on to other things. But yeah, my mindset changed a lot in the last year. I attribute part of it to meeting a girl in December, and she's the first girl that has really made me think of AP as actually not that important, and money is not that important, and I don't think AP is ever that conducive to stable relationships and normal life, and I think, I mean, I met her, but we didn't start dating or anything until actually recently, and when I was playing, even though I was winning a lot of money, I was just kind of unhappy that I was out there alone in the casinos on the weekends, during the week, traveling, and I would have preferred losing money and being with her than winning the kind of money I was just out there alone, and I just felt like I was just chasing the next carrot in front of me, just kind of mindlessly just chasing money, and it didn't feel fulfilling, and looking back, I mean, I can't complain. I mean, the kind of earnings I had, the kind of wins I had across the country are just amazing, and I have to be thankful for them. But it just got to a point where the lifestyle wasn't what it used to be, and I'd lost the, just lost the passion for it.
What did she think about the whole thing?
I mean, she's not someone who's just super against it, doesn't accept any kind of gambling. I mean, she definitely gave me a chance to explain it to her, thought it was pretty cool, definitely saw the challenge and the skill in it. Not something she'd ever want to be a part of herself, but it was more me wanting to kind of be someone that could have a stable, normal life without nonstop travel and just me kind of wanting to be a different kind of person than just living that lifestyle of nonstop blackjack travel.
So you're now with this lady and not wishing anything bad on you, but let's assume that in 4 months, for whatever reason, you're no longer with her, which it may not happen to you, but those kind of things have happened to me and many of the others. Now, would that lead you to go back to the AP life, or it's like now you're into the got to have a girl, got to raise kids, that life, and the AP life is just behind you?
No, I'm actually not thinking about kids anytime soon. I mean, at least for 5 years. I wouldn't say I have to have a girl either. Like I said, she's the first girl I've ever met that made me really step back and say, whoa, I guess what I thought was important in life isn't actually, she just kind of totally changed my mindset. So if I wasn't with her, I'm not sure I'd be able to meet someone very quickly who I felt the same way about. But all that being said, I'm kind of more interested in music now. And that's what I was doing the year after I graduated college. So I graduated in 2015, and I started counting in 2016. So I was working on music for a year, and it's something that is really a process to do anything with, and there's no guarantee that it'll ever go anywhere, but I think it's something I'll regret at the end of my life if I don't give a shot with. And now I have the kind of stability that I don't have to work a job for a while, and I can sort of focus everything on in that. And I also think age kind of matters to some extent in the music business, so I want to use this youth period to try to give it a shot. And I think even if it didn't work out with the girl, I'd still be focusing on music at least for a while and giving it a fair shot. And if it didn't work out, I mean, who knows what would be after that. But I did gambling for 2 years nonstop, and I really seen it all pretty much in terms of, I mean, there's nothing really left in terms of my yearning for gambling at this point. I've just kind of burnt out on it.
You know, I've never been one to play alone. I always hated playing alone. The last time I went on a solo trip was to Iowa in the middle of winter a number of years ago, and I remember sitting in a hotel room, you know, having lost money for the day, and it was cold and miserable, and I just promised myself I would not do that again. Do you think your attitude would be different if you were playing with a partner, someone that was on the road with you?
Possibly. I think that would definitely help. I do have a good network of AP friends, though, and despite being alone, I always felt like I could – there were people I could talk to about gambling if I wanted to. So I don't think that would be a total game changer, but, I mean, being alone was tough sometimes.
On these relationships you have presumably they are still in the gambling world, and now you are not. Have you been able to maintain the relationships, or do you expect to?
Yes. I still enjoy networking with – I've become very close to a select group of guys who are still gambling, and it'd be hard to just like drop all communication with them. And I still have an interest in how they're doing, and if I can help them, I still am willing to. I'm definitely gonna make time for that. I still enjoy networking, and like coming on the show. I mean, it's still a part of my life, I would say, in terms of I think about gambling, I reminisce, so I'm not shutting it out totally, and I'm definitely still staying in contact with my close group of AP friends.
Now, are you writing any songs about your experiences?
I'm writing songs. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of inspiration in terms of places I've been. No specific lyrics about gambling. That's not really the style I'm going for, but I'm sure that just traveling all over the country and just seeing different things, seeing different kinds of people has indirectly led to certain inspirations, which that's a pretty good thing, I think.
And what genre are you in or interested in of music?
Just kind of a acoustic singer songwriter type songs.
Like my partner. Yeah, my longtime partner is a singer songwriter.
Yeah. And I also play piano, and I'm mixing that in there as well, but not very heavy production, more kind of lighter songs.
Now, what about advice for, you're a current road warrior, so you've been out there for the last 2 years. What advice would you give to people who want to take up card counting?
Definitely the first year and even a little bit beyond that, I was just loving it. And like I said on the last show, I didn't really foresee an end to that passion. And somehow it changed. So All I say is really enjoy it when that passion's there and make the most of that energy and really go travel. And I think I did a good job of that. I traveled everywhere. I didn't treat it like a job. It was just what I wanted to do in my free time as well. And if you have that passion for it and it's still exciting and you love the travel and you love playing the game, just take advantage of that and do the best you can because, I mean, I'm not going to say everyone burns out, but it just seems like most people do at some point. And if you didn't really give it your all when that passion and drive and motivation was there, then I think you're going to maybe regret it a little bit. If you just assume that you'll always be motivated and excited about it, I mean, I thought I was, but things happen in life.
You know, I used to say that my one regret was that I didn't work harder back when I didn't have a family and kids, and the games were so plentiful that, you know, in the 1980s, if a whole card wasn't 100%, you didn't bother to play it because they were so prevalent everywhere. And I used to feel that I regretted not working harder back then. But, you know, my attitude toward that has changed over the last number of years because if I had, yeah, okay, I'd have more money to show for it, but I'm doing okay anyway. So I don't know that it would have been better, you know, but I agree about the passion part of it. When you're really enjoying it, you need to take the time to acknowledge that you're really enjoying it and sort of savor those moments.
Yeah, more the acknowledgement and really,
you know, the other thing about the burnout was I always felt like when I was taking these trips, I needed to spend some time doing things on the trip to see the places that I was. You know, I went to too many places in the beginning where I just went and didn't see anything other than the airport, the casino, the hotel room. And I realized that it was important just to get out and go explore the surrounding area and see things.
So did you make that Iowa in the winter? Did you see something there, Richard?
And that one I did not, which I guess is part of why it was so miserable.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I also must say, I think if you force things like tourist destinations or certain touristy things, I think it might not actually be that enjoyable if you're forcing it. And looking back, what I reminisce on the most is almost the drives, and I wasn't really taking time out to do it, but like some of the places I went to, like say North Dakota or Wyoming, just the barren landscapes, or say the Southwest, just the geography there, coming from Iowa, that's totally different. I just really reminisce about being in those kind of places, and I mean, obviously winning money probably adds some good feelings to that, but I don't know if you necessarily need to force things. I think if you travel enough, you'll just kind of see a lot of cool things, even on just the drives, and I totally reminisce about driving through places like, yeah, North Dakota, Wyoming. I don't know. Those are a few examples in my head.
Well, I think the thing that's really so different about our experience is when I think back about the best times of my career, my memories are always about actually things like comp meals with my teammates or nights in the hotel room with my teammates. You know, it's more about that than it is about the playing or going to see, you know, the Grand Canyon or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure moments of camaraderie too. And so Ryamo, you had on the show, he and I shared hotel rooms or flight junkets to different places. And that was as a solo player, you really enjoy that when you can do something like that. And so that's something I also reminisce about a lot, what you're talking about.
I always just found it sort of hysterical and ironic that, you know, that we're professional gamblers with very large bankrolls, yet there are four of us sharing one hotel room. Not because we were cheap, but because we would rather be in the same room talking into the wee hours of the night, you know, and that often, when you get together in the same room, that often leads to ideas being created.
One of the things leading to burnout is all the repetition. And most gambling games are pretty boring most of the time. There are some really exciting moments, but generally it's the same thing. You're dealt the 16 with this count, you always do blah, blah, blah. And there are different personalities as to whether or not you can put up with that repetition. Certainly video poker is not the most exciting thing in the world, and there are a number of people who just had to get out of video poker because they just couldn't stand all the boringness to it. You know, Jacks Are Better, they think, is the most boring game in the world. And this is the kind of thing maybe somebody could know about beforehand. Are you somebody who is easily bored? Are you somebody who can do something boring, but doing it at a high level of accuracy and keep yourself interested? If you can't do it outside of gambling, you probably are not going to be able to do it inside of gambling. And so someone could know that really before they started. It's not going to change once you get money on the table.
I would actually say I never got bored with it. The burnout actually had nothing to do with that. It was more, I don't know, like I've said, the feeling of fulfillment and is this really what I want to do with my life, and am I going to sacrifice giving music a shot? And I met this girl who made me just realize blackjack isn't the most important thing, but I must say I was never bored, especially betting stuff like 2x2000 and the kind of swings you get when you double down and split a bunch of hands. And the earnings goals kept it interesting, too. I really I kept setting goals, and that kept the motivation definitely there. I never got bored, even though I mean, 2,500 hours, that's so many hands and so many of the same situations coming up. But I think just everything, the heat, playing in different states, casinos acting differently, me having to do different acts in different situations, just really the swings. I was never bored with it.
Now, if you're betting 2x2000, how did you deal with the CTR issues, or did you just get a player's card and didn't your name get fried? How did that work?
I started going out of my way to get chips for certain stores that I was planning on playing big at, and I was able to do that for some of them, and for others, I did things like go buy in $2,500 at the craps table, make a don't pass bet. If I lose, say, I'm done with this. If I win, say, I don't want to give it back, or something like that. And especially at big casinos, which were the ones that I could play that kind of way at, during busy times, I could go do that at craps. I could go do that at Baccarat. And without them really even knowing, because it's different pits, I could kind of easily accumulate 10,000 in chips before I even reached the blackjack table. And so that was for places where I didn't have any chips going in. I tried to do that. And I tried to go during weekends, busy times where they really wouldn't catch on. And that seemed to work. I mean, that's a good cushion to start out. few times, I mean, obviously it wasn't enough. And if I'm losing that much, sometimes I just CTR, just gave it a chance because who knows, they might gamble with me for a while, even if they look me up and see that my name's dirty. I mean, with my act, I definitely tried to play it off like a gambler and like I was on tilt and getting really animated if I was losing. So I think a few places gambled with me, the ones that I had the CTR. And then a couple sessions I got so lucky. I mean, I was playing 2x2,000, but I somehow didn't buy in over 10,000. Like, part of the big bankroll increase, I actually had 2 6-figure sessions, one in March and one in May. And on both those sessions, they never got my name because my buy-in was like 7,000 or something. And I just won those first 2 bets. And I mean, that's nothing you can just set out to do, but it just kind of happened those days where I just won right away and then they didn't have my name and couldn't really evaluate that well and then just kind of watched it happen. So definitely some luck in there as well.
And then would you then at the end take the CTR and cash out or would you just hang on to the chips?
Well, with those sessions, I was just, it didn't matter how long I was going to play till back off. And, cause when you get up 50,000 and, something like that, I mean, there's no coming back later. I mean, it's just see how long to take it. And I, one of those sessions was just about 8 hours on a grave shift, but the other one, was like an 18-hour session and there was a lot of coffee involved and I just had to stick it out. And then obviously when the backup happens, I don't really care that like they're going to remember me forever. So I'm just going to CTR and cash out everything.
And did you have any really bad backoffs or bad 86s kind of?
I must say Caesars Entertainment was by far my biggest trouble in my AP career just because of their whole nationwide trespass thing and then just initially refusing to cash me out because I technically was trespassed and not allowed to be there, even though I wasn't trespassed at X property, and then having to go through this whole thing. I never actually had to go to court or take any legal action, but there was definitely some waiting time where I didn't know what was going to happen, and they were saying they weren't going to pay me. But I think in the end it was all bluff, and you have to threaten with lawyers, and you have to stand your ground and say that you know that you can't blanket trespass when Caesars Entertainment is so split up in terms of ownership. And eventually everything got cashed, but I must say it was a lot of worrying and a lot of trouble. And just terrible trespasses along with those experiences with them. So Caesars was quite the problem. But there was also just a memorable 86 that happened in California. It's just a little funny story. So I didn't win too much. They just realized I'm counting, just 86 me. And then when they cash me out, there's a door leading to the outside right near the cashier's cage, and they make me leave out of that. But I know that I'm parked in their garage, which is actually a long way from there. This is like a huge casino. And when we get out that door, they're doing some construction, and I have to cross this, like, big grassy area by foot and go over, like, almost a highway, like a major road where cars are going pretty fast to get over to the garage. Whereas, so these guards are escorting me, and I say, do we have to leave out of here? Can't I just go back to the casino and go through the skywalk to the garage? And they said, no, it's when we have an advantage player, it's our policy to get them out of the casino as quickly as possible, always using the nearest door. We just have to get them out as quick as possible, as if my presence is just eking more money out of them by the minute if I'm still in the building. So, and it was so inconvenient. They were walking with me to my car on this long, inconvenient route over rough terrain. And it was so funny if you saw the scene.
And so they were going to go to your car and get your license number, whether you wanted to or not. They were going to take you all the way to your car?
Yeah, I mean, I had a rental car also, which is, made it a little bit more funny. It was in California, but it just the layout of the property, it would have been so easy to go back through the casino and through the skywalk, but getting to the garage by foot from the outside was 100 times more complicated, and it was just ridiculous that their policy was out the nearest door as quick as possible, just a card counter.
Yeah, I don't think it's the license plate. They want to make sure that you're leaving the property, but nobody can make, you know, a decision for themselves, right? They all have to follow whatever rule they've been told by some guy who sits in an office somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. We've been talking to Yossi, a card counter, who's kind of given up the life. And we're going to take a few minutes for some commercials, and then we have some more questions for Yossi. The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. The promotion during October is called Free Play with a Kicker. Each Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, you pick up your normal free play. If you pick that up on Friday or Saturday of the same week, you get an additional amount of free play. If you pick up all 8 free play awards on Monday, October 29th, you get a double free play pickup. The new semester of video poker classes will begin on Tuesday, January 8th. All the details are on bobdancer.com. We have a new sponsor, Auto Slash. The big advantage to Auto Slash is once you sign up for it and say you want this trip at a particular city on a particular time, they will give it to you. And then if they find a lower rate before you actually pick up the car, you get the lower rate. So for me personally, that is a godsend. I don't want to be making 14 phone calls to find out where I can get the best rates and put on hold the idea that I can just sign up with them and they will do all that heavy lifting for me and I'm going to end up with something that's pretty good. That is, I would actually be willing to pay a premium for that. But instead I have to put up with the discount. So I've been using them since I heard about it from Jimmy Jazz, 3 or 4 years ago on this show.
Yeah. I just want to add that when you first go there, they have these check boxes so that if you have Costco or an American Express card, you can put in any of these things that they have so that if there's any discount code for those things, they will find it and apply it for you. So, and as Bob mentioned, anytime it gets cheaper, they send you an email, you just click on it and you get the new reservation at the lower rate. Sometimes it switches from different car rental companies from one to the next. I one time had a rental where I switched 4 times during the course of the time waiting to pick up the car, and the price was less than half. So the average user saves 30% over other car rental places, and it is always free. One other thing, I'm renting a car in November, and you don't put in any credit card information. So when I reserved the car, they said, if you want to pay for the car now, you can get it at a 17% discount. And if you choose that option, they still have the tracker, and if things get cheaper, it'll still allow you to then get the cheaper rate. So that's just another one of the features. And as I say, it's always free, so no lose.
Yeah. One thing that happened to me that I needed to guard against is I was on a cruise leaving LA area to go to Hawaii. And so 5 days over there, and we stopped at 5 different
places on the islands and then 5 days back. And so I knew the city I was coming into, but that's, so just putting in the city sometimes isn't enough. When we got to Oahu itself, just putting in the city, some would put you at the airport rental place, and that might not have been the right place that you wanted to go. So you need to do a little bit of research as to where the cruise ship is coming into and find out, look for which car rental places are close to there and put them in specifically that I actually want the one on 4th Street or I want the one on wherever it is. And because it can be a ways for just the city name. Cities can be pretty big sometimes.
Yeah, actually, I have a rental coming up also in January and that I'm renting from here in Las Vegas. And I what I do is I put in two reservations, one at the airport and one in the city of Las Vegas, and then whichever one is going to end up cheaper at the time that I'm ready to rent, that's the one I end up taking. So,
are they tied now?
No, currently, actually, currently the airport is running a little cheaper than the city rental. So we'll see what happens in January when it actually comes up.
All right. So let's talk about videopoker.com. It's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on many of the games. If you want a free trial for the gold membership, for those of whom have not had trials before, new members, go to videopoker.com/GWAE, gambling with an edge, 30 days of gold for free. This code expires the end of this year. Game of the week is Stack the Deck. It is a 7 coins per line game where the dealt hand of trips, quads, full houses, and four of the royal, you receive from 3 to 5 extra cards of the exact card you need to make the hand. For example, if you're dealt 3-3-3-6-6 in double-double bonus, instead of having 1-3 to make the 4 of a kind, if you draw to it, they will give you 5 extra 3s. So now you'll have 6 threes out of 52 cards, giving you plenty of chances for quads, quints, and quads with a kicker. They have extra pay schedule category of a baby royal, which means king to nine suited, and 5 of a kind. Since the game is fixed as a 7-coin game, sometimes they have to change the pay schedule to make the math work on the games. That is the 9-6-4 double-double bonus version. And approximately the same pay schedule has to be 10-7-5, which means you get more for the full house, more for the flush, and more for the straight. This necessitates a considerable number of strategic changes to play appropriately. All right, we are back with Yossi, who has given up the life. Now, have you had any pleasant surprises in casinos recently that you can tell us about?
When I was on the show last time, I hadn't been to the East Coast, but I like I said, I've been everywhere now. I was at this big casino on the East Coast, big property. I was playing high limit. They had $5,000 maxes there. I wasn't playing that high, but I was definitely playing big there. But this was during a negative count, and the dealer had a 17 and went to draw on it and realized she wasn't going to draw. But so there was actually this guy watching my play. I was heads up, kind of in the middle of the table, and he was over near first base. And I think he'd, like, lost his money or something. He was just, like, impressed by my action or something. And he was just watching, and he was being kind of annoying, but I hadn't told him to bug off for whatever reason. And so when she exposed this card, I didn't see it, but he did, and he's like, hey, that's an ace. And the pit definitely wasn't watching, and the dealer wasn't even really aware of it either. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so I bet 5,000, which was the biggest I've ever bet on a single hand. And I was nervous. Yeah, I was nervous about this since it was a negative count. I know it's still a huge edge. I have to make the play, but it was like probably a negative 1.5% edge. I thought for sure I'm not getting blackjack. I'm probably going to have to deal with a ace four versus like a nine or something. It's just going to end badly. And somehow I get the blackjack for 7,500. And dealer also shows 10, and I'm like, okay, just do not push this, please. And she doesn't have it, and that was awesome. Biggest hand I've ever played, got a blackjack. I think that's pretty good, pretty good thing. And I'm also lucky that it happened at a big property like that with a high max. I mean, I've played plenty of 500 max games. I mean, I'll take that 750, but it's not going to be as cool as what happened there for 7,500 on one hand. That was pretty, and the pit didn't see it. I mean, for whatever
reason,
dealer
didn't have to call on a $5,000 bet.
I'd been playing 2x1500 at least, and I guess she just was used to orange chips on it. But yeah, I tried not to celebrate too much. I didn't want the pit to even come over and try to roll back the surveillance tape or something and try to undo it. So I just stayed really quiet, but I was super excited.
What was your policy on tipping?
Yeah, that's interesting. In 2017, I actually kept track of it. For the whole calendar year, I tipped 7,000. And I used to really believe in it. And I mean, I think it can work for some people. I think it can add money in the long run just by really getting in with the pit and playing long hours. But I think that's probably better for a rated player. And I don't think they ever really liked me anyways, any of the pits. So I think the tipping was kind of, it was just wasteful. And so I was thinking about that at the end of 2017. And in 2018, I just vowed not to tip and just see if I noticed a difference. And I have to say, I think that 7,000 was a total waste just because of the way I play. I don't think they like me. And if they come to their conclusion, it doesn't matter if I've tipped. So for me, it wasn't a good idea. And I definitely saved a lot of money in 2018, but not really pretty confident in the fact that it didn't add any time to my play in 2017. But it's definitely awkward for tippers, especially when they see someone betting this big, they get excited about tips, and it's definitely kind of awkward. So, I mean, I feel bad, but it is what it is. I gave my share last year.
Right.
When you reached a magic number, whether it was 500,000 or 800,000 or a million, did you go out and celebrate it all, or was it just, oh, that's cool, add it to bankroll, keep going?
So yeah, when I was on the show in October, I was around 300,000. I wasn't really even thinking of a year-end goal, and then my first week in December was just unreal, and I realized I only needed to make 30,000 more or something to have a $500,000 year, which I thought that really excited me at the time. And so I just traveled until I got that, and then kind of celebrated, took some time off because I reached that mid month in December, and I thought that was just great to have a $500,000 year. And then obviously, like many people have said, the goalpost just keeps getting set back. And I thought, okay, I mean, I want, by any means necessary, and no matter how long it takes, I want to hit seven figures in my blackjack career. And never thought it would happen in 2 years, but somehow did. I mean, a couple 100K sessions definitely speed that up without losing sessions of similar size. So before that happened, I'd met this girl, and I was already kind of unhappy playing. But once I actually reached that goal so quickly, I was really okay to just kind of let it go at that point and turn to other things. But I think I wanted to reach that goal, and I think I would have kept playing another few years to reach that. I mean, it was just on my mind for a while. So no huge celebrations, no excessive purchases or parties or anything, but just kind of happiness and seeing hard work and travel paying off. So I was definitely happy to those earnings goals definitely kept the motivation alive, I'll say that.
So another very successful card counter that we had on the show was Small Cap. And his approach, I mean, both of you seem to go to places and play until you get thrown out at high stakes. But his approach seems to be smaller spread, more cover to try to buy longevity. And it sounds like your approach is the opposite, large spread, no cover. Is that true? Is that right?
No cover if I don't think it matters. I play double deck games where I kind of analyze who's in the pit, and I'll try like my max bet off the top. And if it really seems to think I'm not legit at all, I mean, I'm definitely willing to use that cover because that has bought me a lot of time. I mean, on good games like that, you can definitely afford to. So I'll max bet off the top a few times early in the session, and they seem to write me off. And a couple times I was up mid five figures before they came back and looked at me. So I think sometimes cover's great. Definitely glad I did stuff like that in certain situations, but it was kind of just reading the pit, seeing what I think their assumptions of me are or whatnot. And then other times I feel like I have a sharp pit. Then I just want to make them gamble with me. So I'm not going to use a lot of cover. I'm betting so big, 2x2,000. I'm going to hope that they think I can't afford this. And I have gambling tendencies. I have tilting tendencies. And so then I'm not going to waste any cover on like minimum bets. So one of my 100K sessions, my minimum bet was like green chips, like $50 or something.
Spreading 50 to two hands of 2,000.
Yeah, and so they know I'm count. I mean, I'm just going to kind of rub it in their face that I'm counting, but hope that they gamble with me. And it definitely happened a few times, and I think sometimes I get up a certain amount, and then they want to get some back before they back me off. And, I mean, I've had sessions where I was up and then dumped some back, and then they back me off, which is frustrating. Dumped, like, 20,000 back, and then the back off came. I mean, that sucks, but I've had other sessions where like one of the first 100K session I had, I think they knew for a while, and then I just never had a downswing. I just kept steadily going from, I was up 50,000, 70,000, and then they just cried mercy at the end. But I really think they'd been waiting for me to dump some back and then back me off because they didn't want to accept that kind of loss. So, I think when you have a sharp pit, just hope that they think you can't afford these kind of bets and let's gamble. But other times, cover was great, and it definitely bought me time.
You told us.
Actually, I have a quick funny story about that. Just because it's kind of crazy that they have these sort of superstitious ideas about gambling. But I had a friend who used to be a pit boss, and he went up to another friend. They didn't know each other at the time. And he said, I have good news and bad news. And the player said, what's the bad news? And he said, the shift manager knows you're counting cards. And he said, oh, what's the good news? He thinks you're overbetting your bankroll, so he wants to let you keep playing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think that person has been on the show a couple times. That's interesting. When we were talking to you before the last show a year ago, you indicated that you stand up when you're playing more than most other players do. You didn't want us to ask about it because you didn't want casinos to use that as an identifying feature, but now you've retired. Why do you like standing up?
I mean, this goes, if you saw what I wear in a lot of these sessions, I just really look like someone who is probably way over betting and standing up. I think it's just something you see gamblers do. Like maybe if, yeah, like athletes in high limit rooms who are just blowing away their money, they're always standing. And I also am pretty emotional when I play, and I turn around. I like, when I have a big hand and they're about to draw on a bust card, I just turn around and walk away and say, I don't want to see it. Stuff like that. I think, I just kind of put on a show, which I think you have to when you're betting that big. And so, this just goes along with what I was just talking about, gambling with me. I mean, I think I did a great job of putting on this persona that I'm probably, even if I have some counting skills, I'm probably just a gambler at heart and have tilting tendencies and just overbetting. So it was just a whole kind of persona, and I think it really worked.
You know, I have to say, this is, I don't know how much you ran into this, but a lot of the casinos, particularly in Las Vegas, have a rule against standing up while you play, which is just idiocy. And most of the bosses don't even know why they have that rule, right? So, but the rule was originally on handheld games, if someone had marked the cards, if they stood up, they could see the top of the deck to see the marks on the cards. But most bosses don't know that, so they're telling you you can't stand up even when you're playing a shoe game, which makes no sense at all. I also prefer standing up, but just for a different reason, mainly because it's kind of so unhealthy to sit in a chair for 8 to 12 to 16 hours. And so I prefer standing up just because my back ends up feeling better, my shoulders, my neck, you know, than it would if I sat in a chair all that time.
That sounds like something you could actually accurately tell the pit without jeopardizing yourself. You know, if you say, my back is killing me when I'm sitting down, if I have to sit, I'm going to have to leave. But when I stand up, I can play a little bit longer, but I am really uncomfortable now. Wouldn't they normally say, sure, keep playing when you're uncomfortable? Or something like that?
No, because like the idiot security guards that made Yoshi go out the side door and walk, you know, through the terrain, some guy in an office made a rule, and nobody is willing to use their own brain to think for themselves and say, yeah, this is a customer service industry. We should, you know, service the person, you know, that we're dealing to. And I've also had the opposite. I've been on a crap game where I was on a crap game for 8 hours, and I said, hey, can I pull up a chair? No, sorry, that's not allowed. You know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I played roughly half double deck and half six deck. I mean, a couple eight decks here and there, never single deck. I never really had anywhere that made me sit down on a six deck, but definitely a lot of double deck games, like the handheld ones where they toss you the cards, that they made me sit. So in those situations, I mean, I think you can kind of make a show of, like, when they're dealing the cards face down, like, you peek at one of them, you slap them down. So I had to make up for it that way since I was sitting. But all the six deck games I played, I was able to stand and kind of, yeah, I guess there might be some out there to make you sit for that.
I'm really shocked, actually, that you, so much of your play was on double deck. It seems here in Vegas that you would just not get any play at all on double deck for those kind of stakes. Were you able to?
I must say, I made less than $10,000 in Nevada in my career. It was not a happy hunting ground. I don't even really think about Vegas in terms of my career. I mean, I made trips there. I definitely went there, but they never took my action after a certain point, and it was just, the trips were frustrating. And there's a lot of double deck in the Midwest for sure. And California has a lot of double deck, and I definitely got the hours in on double deck. And
wow, that's amazing.
Starting out with, I played probably more six deck in the last year, but when I was starting out with a clean name, obviously, and the low bankroll, you go for the double deck. And I was in a part of the Midwest where there were great games with low minimums. So that's where a lot of my double deck hours came from. But I definitely played some lately. I don't think I ever, had a trip to a state with like a lot of casinos that I didn't get some double deck in. Besides maybe the East Coast, like Atlantic City, it's really hard to find over there. But
yeah, that's great.
We're about to let you go, Yossi. Was there anything that you wanted us to ask you, but for whatever reason we haven't yet, but you got something you want to say?
No, not really. Maybe just a funny story to end
okay.
it. I mean, I had a couple career, just like fond memories. This girl that I'm so crazy about, I don't think I would have ever met her if not for this trespass. So there was this casino in Wisconsin that I was playing for a while, and it didn't seem like they had databases, and so I was raided because I started out just losing so much, and they caught me to this Packers game, and I'm not like a huge NFL fan, I rarely watch, but I caught me 2 tickets, and I thought, oh, this would be cool, and I have a friend who loves the NFL, so we were going to go up to that, and I left my last trip there on good terms. I mean, they seemed to be loving me. I mean, the hosts were all over me. The pit was all over me, actually, as well. And so I was planning to go to this Packers game, and then, like, a week before the game, I was somewhere else, and they mailed me a trespass letter, and I don't know why, but maybe they heard from another casino, maybe they got databases or something, but they trespassed me, so the game's canceled, the game's off. So, like, the very same day that the game, I'm in Kansas City, which is where I meet this girl, I just by the nature of how we met, I don't think we would have met if that trespass hadn't happened. And then that was early December, and that was the start of my amazing month, which kind of catapulted my bankroll to where I could play 2x2000. And I mean, this is kind of floppy thinking. I mean, it's all just EV, but you can't really ignore some things that happen like that, and I think there was definitely a lot of luck in certain points in my career, and so maybe if I would have not had that trespass, I would have played different places that month, ran terrible, had my losing streak, which you guys are amazed that I never had. I wouldn't know this girl, so thank. Sometimes trespasses can be great. I just attribute a lot of things to that time period, and it's just kind of funny how things happen, so...
Well, insofar as not meeting the girl, if you had woken up 10 minutes later that day or missed the signal instead of catching the signal, there's just so many different things that had to happen and for you to be at exactly the same place as you were. So
I can tell you,
yes?
I can tell you exactly why it happened. Because in China, a butterfly flapped his wings.
That's it. So, but it's fun to look back. If I wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have had this. So when there's a zillion different things that happened that day that you have long since forgotten. But, Yossi, I'm glad you're doing well. Glad you're a millionaire at 30. Hope your music career goes well. Thank you very much for being here. Richard, thank you. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.